Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Certainly a lot of news to cover on the program, and we'll get into the matchup between the Giants and the Redskins to wrap up the regular season for both squads. Neither of the teams have anything mathematically to play for, but certainly there could be a few intriguing storylines given the fact that both teams may have different quarterbacks next season depending on what plays out with Kirk Cousins and Eli Manning respectively. We'll get into that a little bit later on, but let's start with the big topics, and that is one regarding Eli Apple, Paul, and the other regarding Davis Webb. First of all, the Giants announced yesterday that Eli Apple has been suspended for the regular season finale. This is the third cornerback this year. Hard to believe the top three corners from last season have all been suspended for one game, that being Janoris Jenkins, DRC, as well as Eli Apple. And in a statement that the Giants released, they said there was a pattern of behavior that led to conduct detrimental to the team. And Paul, you know, this is really capping off an extremely hectic season for Eli Apple, which unfortunately has been overshadowed by his issues off the field as opposed to what he's done on the field.
The shame of it is he's a very talented player. He is a first-round NFL talent. There is no question in my mind about that. He showed it last year as a rookie. And I've often said during the course of this season, as it's just fallen apart for him individually as well as for the team, that he just needs to get cleaned out. And I mean himself personally. He needs to clean out all the demons and all the things that are going on with him off the field so that he can get himself straight and then worry about how to be a terrific football player again. And I've said all along for weeks now, the best thing that could happen to him is the offseason. He needs an offseason to just get away from all of the other stuff because it's, look, guys, I don't want to disrespect professional football, but to be honest, when you have as many things going wrong in your life as he does, pro football becomes much more of a burden to you. Even though it's your job and that's how you earn your living, it becomes much more of a burden than it actually becomes part of what you have to do. Because I'm one who believes, much like Justin Tuck when he said all in, you have to be in it physically, mentally, and emotionally to be able to perform at the highest level, to be successful in the National Football League. This is not a bunch of guys on the street corner. These are not a bunch of guys running around in a playground somewhere. This is the NFL. These guys are the best of the best. If you want to be an NFL player, and if you want to be a starter in the NFL, you've got to be all in. If you're not, then you just don't belong there. And so my feeling is that Eli Apple has been so badly sidetracked, and I've said this on the program before, maybe not to this degree, but I'm going to scream it from the top of the mountains now. He has been so badly sidetracked, he needs to get himself right and his situation right, his place in his life right, before he can even attempt to be all in as a football player. That's my feeling, whether or not it's here or with another team. Hey, that's not my job to say. But what I can say is, after being around for 35 years, I've seen guys who get sidetracked. And if you allow your life to sidetrack you and prevent you from being all in on the football field, you will never be the football player that you're supposed to be. You will hurt your football career, and you will hurt your team by doing so.
Well, I agree with you, Paul. I think the mental game is just as important as the physical aspects to succeed in the National Football League. I'll take it a step further. I know that every other job that an individual has may not be comparable to what it takes to go out and perform every single Sunday in the NFL. But I think everybody can relate, Paul, if you have distractions in your personal life, it could very well affect your professional life because your mind is not necessarily focused on the task at hand. Whether you're a football player, whether you're a commentator, whether you're a cashier at a local deli, it makes no difference. If your mindset is not in it, it's going to obviously impact your production and your value to the company or the team that you're on. And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing, because what's amazing is Eli Apple, if you look back at his rookie season, transition was not a problem. fit in very well with this team, carved out a role, Paul, and they had arguably one of the best trios at the cornerback position in the NFL last season.
People now, talked about them being a top three.
Exactly. So now you flip the calendar a year forward, and nobody's talking about the secondary in that same light. Nobody's talking about the defense in that same light. Now, granted, there were other factors, injuries, breakdowns, and so forth. It's not just Eli Apple, but I don't believe that guys just forget how to play football. That's my point. You don't just lose grasp of the X's and O's. Clearly, there are things outside of football that have led to this point as to why a second-year player is suspended at the end of the season and why there's been distractions from outside of football. There's more to it than just the X's and O's standpoint. So, you know, it's going to be a critical offseason for not just the entire Giants organization, but to your point, Paul, for Eli Apple as an individual to step back, to reflect what he wants out of football, whether or not his personal life is impacting his football life. I mean, those are things that he's going to have to step back and reflect on.
Let me make something very, very clear. There have been hundreds, if not thousands of players over the last couple of decades, three, four, five, I don't care how far you want to go back, who have had
horrible
off-the-field issues.
Yeah.
Some guys have had an addiction, whether it be substance abuse, alcohol abuse, whether they were in abusive relationships. They've had legitimate maladies that they had to overcome to straighten their careers out. Chris Carter's a great example. He was a horrible, self-admitted guy.
A guy that turned
things around. Yeah. Just absolutely going down the wrong path with substance abuse and became a Hall of Fame receiver after he got himself right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting that Eli Apple has any type of those maladies, but clearly he has a dysfunctional off-the-field setup going on right now in his life. And it's entirely possible that once that gets cleaned up, once that gets straightened out, once he's able to be confident in himself as a person and his family scenario, that he will then be able to go all in on the football field again, and he might wind up turning into a terrific player. And he may, in fact, reach his full potential many years down the road. But right now, it's not happening for him. It's just an absolute mess. And I can only say this. If you're the Giants, much like, you know what, it's better I don't name names, but much like other guys that they have stuck with through thick and thin, through many serious problems, and I think you know some of the guys I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You can do it to a point, and then you got to draw a line, and then you got to say, all right, this is it. This is where the line is. We've done everything we can do to bend over backwards to help you, to try to get you through whatever it is that you're going through, and we can't do any more for you. You can't be on the team anymore. I don't know if the Giants are there yet with Eli Apple. You don't know that.
No, I mean, that's pure speculation. Here's the other thing I was going to add to that point, Paul. Remember, the new general manager is going to have his own philosophy on how the current roster looks and the individual players that are on that roster.
And so the coach.
Correct. So we don't know if that person comes from an external means, meaning somebody that's not within this organization, who has not been around seeing what's happened with Eli Apple this season. Their opinion of Eli Apple may be completely different than individuals in this current building.
The new guy will get the personnel file, and he'll have an understanding of what is going on. He will also get the tapes from last season when Eli Apple was a really good player. And then he will have to evaluate going forward, and I'm sure that an issue such as this will probably go upstairs, too, to ownership. I got a feeling, knowing how especially the Mara family feels about their team, they look at their players as family.
Yeah.
I'm quite confident that there'll be a discussion as well with ownership to figure out how to move forward once the new coach and the new GM are in place. So in my mind, I think anybody who can give you a definitive answer on Eli Apple's future today, I think they're lying to you or they're simply talking, throwing mud against the wall.
Well, I think they're speculating. That's really all they're doing.
Because there's nothing that we can say that will give you any substantial a concrete evidence as to what's going to happen.
There are so many unknown factors, but just to piggyback off of your point, what the Giants ownership as well as the general manager, the front office, is going to have to evaluate, there's a lot of different angles here, Paul. It's Eli Apple, the football player, Eli Apple, the personal individual, The status of the locker room, Paul, you have to take into consideration. You can't dismiss that. The value of bringing back a former first-round pick who's not that removed from the draft, the pros and cons of that, all of those things have to be weighed. To me, it's not just one of those yes or no black and white type of answers.
No, it's
I think
not.
There's many different layers to evaluating Eli Apple at this point.
I just want to stress one thing to you before we move on from the topic, and that is, once again, the Giants as a franchise do care about their players. They invest in their players, not just financially with the contracts, but also on a personal level. And I guarantee you that this organization has done everything they could to try to support Eli Apple to this point, and I'm sure that they will take it right up to the breaking point. Whatever that breaking point is, they will take it right up to the breaking point before they finally decide, if it ever gets there, enough is enough.
Before we move on to Davis Webb, one other example that I wanted to bring up, and once again, this is not necessarily similar to what Eli Apple is dealing with, but you know, you brought up Chris Carter, who I think is at one end of the spectrum, a guy that had personal demons, turned things around. The guy that I would use on the opposite end of the spectrum, Paul, and this is just one of the names that popped into my head, Ryan Leaf, who was the number one overall pick the year Peyton Manning was selected. What happened? A lot of upside, one of the best quarterbacks out there. Substance abuse, personal demons, personal issues came back to plague him, and that's why his career was ultimately cut short.
Look, it can go one of two ways, and we all know what those two ways are. Either the career goes down the tubes and it's shot and he never becomes anything of what he was supposed to be, or somehow, some way, it gets cleaned up and the guy reaches his potential. I mean, really, that's the way it's going to be, one of two things. Let's not kid ourselves. That's just the way it's going to be.
So that was the first big storyline that developed from yesterday. The second storyline is that Steve Spagnuolo, the interim head coach, announced that Davis Webb is going to be the number two quarterback for this final regular season game, which means Geno Smith moves down to third and they're going to dress Davis Webb. He's going to get a jersey for the first time this season. Now, when we've had these conversations, we've been fielding calls all season long, Paul. Everything is about, you know, will Davis Webb play? Will he have an opportunity to get in? And our responses have been, wait a minute, let's see Davis Webb be active for a game first before we even take the next step in the conversation, no? Okay, so now we're there. We're there. The point is he's going to be active.
Yes.
But with that being said, and maybe you were going to get to this statement, that doesn't guarantee that he's going to get into the game on Sunday. Those are two different things.
Way two different things. Steve Spagnuolo made it very clear he still does want to win this game. And look, the Giants and the Redskins have both had very difficult seasons. If you remember the game in Washington back on Thanksgiving night, that game was nip and tuck into the middle of the fourth quarter before the Redskins finally pulled away and won the game. I don't expect this game to be a blowout. I really don't. I mean, it's entirely possible it's a 16-13 game or a 13-10 game going into the fourth quarter. And so, you know, look, I'm a big Davis Webb guy. Everybody out there knows that. I don't necessarily know that he's got a good chance to play because I don't see this game being out of hand, if it even gets out of hand, until, what, 3 minutes to go maybe? I mean,
I'm with you, Paul. I think I could see this going down to the wire. I mean, all of these divisional games. I mean, the Dallas game, the Cowboys didn't pull away until late in the fourth quarter, too. I mean, that was neck and neck. The Eagles game was down to the wire. I always say you throw the records out. I understand it's a cliched statement, but these teams know each other so well. They know the personnel. They know their tendencies. No matter how lopsided the talent pool is, these games tend to be close. And here's the other thing, Paul, before you continue. Remember, Spags after the Cardinals game. And I'm going to go back because I think this is an important quote. He was asked about, wouldn't that have been the ideal situation for Davis Webb to have been active, right?
Yes.
It was a 23-0 game. The media was really hammering that narrative home. And Spag said, well, first of all, it's still a two-possession game early in the fourth quarter.
And that's what I was just going to bring up.
And I would have kept Eli Manning in the game because we still have an opportunity to win it.
Two possessions, and to me, that was the one thing, without Spags coming out and clearly defining what he's thinking about, when he said that in a very vague sense, that said to me, okay, you know what? So they're going to have to be down by more than two scores before he even thinks about putting Davis Webb in the game. And I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen on Sunday. Or, for that matter, if they'll be up by two scores. I just don't think that this game is going to be lopsided.
No, I'm with you. And that, to me, is the million-dollar question. Are we going to get to a point where they're comfortable that they have the game in hand, or they feel as if the game is finished at this point and they're willing to give Davis Webb a series or two? And when I listened to Spags after that Cardinals game, and that was a lopsided game, and I don't think anybody even watching that game felt that there was going to be a shift in momentum.
No.
Spags still made it clear, two-possession game, I don't think we're out of it. I'm not taking Eli Manning out of the contest because we're in it to win it.
You know, I just want to say one thing, and again, I must reassess or reassert, I'm a Davis Webb guy. You know that.
Yes.
I'm a big Davis Webb supporter. But I'm going to tell you, have you seen the injury list lately, folks? It's bad. It's real bad. And the Giants have 51 drop passes this year by my count. Now, remember, I do my own subjective tape review. I've got 51 drop passes for the Giants. 51. Eli Manning's previous career high was 40 in 2007. He's got 51 drop passes.
That puts things in perspective.
By his cohorts this year.
Yeah.
Five last week.
To me,
in Arizona.
No, and I think you bring up a good point. By the way, it's at DatinoDrops.com if you
there
want
you
to
go.
Keep tally of all the drops. He updates the charts every single week.
I absolutely do. You want to see him?
No,
they're right here.
I'm joking.
You want to put them on the screen?
That's a blank screen right now.
All right, but
no,
I got him.
I think everybody believes you.
Okay.
Trust me, I
believe
you.
Here's my point.
Yes.
Here's my point. You're going to put Davis Webb in the game, and he's going to get short-circuited by – who knows who's going to be out there? You might be out there taking passes from the slot.
I could survive maybe one play.
Let me ask you the question, really simple. If Davis Webb gets in for a series or two, right, and goes 1-for-6 with two drops, let's just say, for argument's sake, or the line just totally crumbles and collapses, and much like we've seen Eli have to throw leaning backwards, and, you know, he gets picked off twice in a cameo role, what do you think the fan reaction is going to be?
Well, I think
they're going to crucify this kid.
I would agree with you there. Now, with that being said, though, Paul, that's the court of public opinion, as I like to call it. I would argue, though, there's still value from a football executive standpoint to see how he deals with adversity.
I agree with you because I've already spelled this out. I don't know who I was with. I was with Russ Salzburg about a week or so ago, and I did spell out on the program the three things that coaches would be looking for in a cameo role, whether it was a four-minute offense or a two-minute offense, and what they need to see Davis Webb check in terms of the boxes to give them a good feeling about him. And so I agree there is value football-wise. The problem is because of the way the public and the media has taken it upon themselves to slam and bash the way this season has gone, and the negative dark cloud that is hanging over the field right now, do you really need this kid to be pummeled if he goes in there and gets short-circuited by his own people?
No, I get it. And once again, I think it's a valid point you bring up. I just don't think...
I wonder how much is that negative worth right now?
I just don't think if you're running a football team, and I understand you have to take into consideration your passionate fans. Can you really afford, though, Paul, to make decisions about what the fans are going to say and what the social media reaction is? I mean, good football executives, I think, you know what? We've got to go out there regardless of the reaction we get. We have individuals we need to evaluate. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't have a problem with putting them in because I believe in the kid. And I think he will show well. And I think that the educated fan, much like the coach or the GM or the scout, will look and say, okay, you know what? If he does go 1-for-6 with two picks, they'll probably be able to figure out.
Well, because you understand the circumstances. Yeah.
But the general populace and certainly the writers won't. And they will slam him to no end.
Well, but here's the thing. The general population and the
fans. It's more fun to slam than it is to explain why.
And I give you that, but the general population and the fans are not going to be the new GM.
That is true.
To then ultimately make the decision in the upcoming draft to determine whether or not one series will make or break Davis Webb's career.
I think it's a shame because I would definitely like to see him get in. I don't think the circumstances will allow him to get in, but I also think there is a potential of some negative backlash
And I don't think that's a stretch.
I don't think it needs to be. I think it's wrong. But, you know, I think he should be graded on what it is. I wish everybody could have a coach's eye. And when they watch him, okay, when they watch him, that they would be looking for legitimate football stuff.
Correct.
As opposed to, oh, look at the stat line.
No.
But that's not going
to
happen.
You have to have a big picture perspective.
People
you have to realize
shallow,
the talent.
That's the problem.
No, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you're throwing out there, but for the knowledgeable fans out there who understand that one possession in one series doesn't define a player's career, especially in the early stages, I think they'll understand that. And I've said this comment on this program regarding conversations about plenty of players, even outside of this organization. You don't need to crown or kill a player, especially after one game. To me, that's a small picture perspective that you're providing. So if Davis Webb gets out there, I think it'll be great experience. But as Paul just laid out, and I agree, it's not ideal circumstances given what this team looks like right now. You take it for what it's worth. If you can get a peek of how he deals with adversity and how he handles himself in a regular season game, great. If he doesn't get in, then you know what? The game of speculation is going to ensue into the offseason until the draft comes to determine where the Giants stand with their quarterback
situation.
All
right, we're going to get to the calls in 1 second. I'll give you the three things that my veteran NFL experience people said that they'd be looking for. So you know, if he gets into a game, three things they'd want to see from him, and these are all legitimate things that you can look for in a two-minute drill or a four-minute offense. You need to see, first of all, his command and poise in running the snaps. Does he look like a deer in headlights? Does he have happy feet? Is he looking around not knowing what to do? Does he seem to be having trouble communicating with his coaches and his teammates? So you want to see that he's got control.
Commanding
and that
the huddle.
He's assertive and confident. That's number one. You can tell that right off the bat. Number two, you have to understand if he's picking up a blitz. Now, how can you know that? Because when they get up to the line of scrimmage and he's making his calls and you're seeing the defense doing their adjustments, if somebody comes in scot-free and clean, that means either he didn't recognize it or he didn't make the right call to his offensive line to try to pick it up.
To make a change at the line.
So that's number two. He's got to be able to recognize the blitz and to make a call that will at least give you a chance to get off a play. That's the second thing that I was told he's got. They would have to see. The third thing that you'd want to see if Davis Webb gets in the game has to do with where does he throw the ball. If he goes back and he is in position to pass the ball, he's going to have to go through a progression. One, two, three, maybe even four targets are part of the progression on any given play. It's not about whether or not the pass is completed, knocked down, intercepted. That's a physical thing. It's more important that he throws the ball to the correct receiver. Did he throw it to the right guy who was open in that particular play? In other words, if he's throwing in the double coverage on the left, but there was a guy who was running the out on the right side who had 5 yards of cushion, guess what? He made the wrong decision. That would be a negative. That would not check the box. For him to check that last box to make the appropriate decision on his progression, he's got to be able to, oh, there was the double coverage. I threw to the guy who was open on the right-hand side. Doesn't matter what happens to the result of the play. It's more important that he throws it to the right guy. I was told by veteran coaches, okay, veteran coordinators of years of experience, if he can check those three boxes, and it's absolutely plausible that he could do that in running only a series or two or a possession or two in the game, they would feel very, very good about him.
Well, there's some value in the performance. Yeah.
Because those are the three things where you can actually sense intrinsic value.
At the same time, and I don't disagree with anything you just said, I think it's also important to note that even with watching the game, when you don't know what the play call is and the dynamics behind the play call, there are those things that need to be taken into consideration that only the coaching staff and the players are going to know,
well,
that the average fan is not going to have
that's
known.
Why it's our job then to go into the locker room afterwards or during the week and find out, okay, what was that play? Did he throw
to
the right
to get
guy?
Some more specifics.
Now,
yeah.
If you look at your game pass, your NFL game pass, and you're looking at the end zone shot or the over-the-head 22 shot, that's going to tell you if he threw to a guy who was open or if he threw into coverage when somebody else was open on the other side of the field.
Because you're going to have more of a wide perspective.
You'll be able to see that.
Yeah.
And what I'm talking about is he needs to be able to see from the pocket in an NFL game against an NFL defense at NFL speed. He needs to recognize and survey the whole field and find the open guy. If he can do that, and you can look at Game Pass and find that out. That's not that hard to figure out. These are the kinds of things you'd want to ascertain if Davis Webb gets into a game.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks for tuning in to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the phone lines. Tom is in New Jersey. He gets us going. Tom, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. Hi. Tom. What do you got for us?
I have a question about Eric Flowers. And so what I wanted to ask is that I think at this point there's definitely been progress this year. I think we can all agree on that. It's seen it. But
sure.
I'm still not sure if it's enough to go into next year saying I'm comfortable with Eric Flowers at left tackle. And I'm not sure if the new GM is going to come in and think that he's good enough to keep him there. And so what do you think about moving him around? Do you think it's a possibility to try him out at different positions on the line this year? Do you think that's feasible, or do you think at the most likely scenarios that they'll leave him where he is?
Well, Tom, we'll answer that question. I'm going to let you go because you're coming in and out in terms of the phone call, but do appreciate you tuning in and giving us a ring. Well, I think, first of all, Paul, we don't know what the new GM's perspective is going to be on Eric Flowers. So, I mean, it's very possible we could say that the new GM comes in and has a completely different outlook of Eric Flowers than people currently in the building and says, you know what? I want to test out Eric Flowers at right tackle, and I think that's the move we should go into during the course of OTAs. It's very possible the GM comes in and says that.
Could also make him a guard.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say everything could very well be on the table right now.
I will say this. He's just coming off, with one game to go, his best season so far as a left tackle. He has gotten better. There's no question. And I believe if he was the third best lineman on your offensive line, you'd be fine with that. I really do. But the problem is right now the Giants' offensive line has been in such disarray that he is the only lineman on this roster who has started every game at his original position.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely ridiculous and absurd. But he's been the rock. And when your rock is a guy who is not at the top of his game, is not amongst the elite at his position, that's bad.
No, I think all of that is valid. The other thing that I've noticed this season, it didn't necessarily show up in each of the last two games because I'm bringing up my penalty log, and that was one of the things that I also was looking for Flowers to improve upon, you know, not having those mental lapses during the course of the game. And for this season, for the most part, he's done very well. Now, as I'm looking at my log here, he has had a holding call against him in each of the last two games, but there was a stretch, Paul, where he went at least 7 or 8 straight games without picking up a penalty, or at least a penalty going against the Giants. Right before the Redskins game where he had another holding call. So he's had a penalty in terms of a holding call in 3 of the last 5 games. But there was a stretch from the early stage of the season through the Chiefs game where it was spotless, well-disciplined football. And that was important because there were stretches early in his career where you would pencil in, all right, Flowers was called for a penalty. And I think he did a good job eliminating that aspect. So that's another big part of the evaluation in terms of how he's performed this season.
He's been flagged 9 times this year, and it's gone up in recent weeks. Flagged 9 times, 3 of them have been declined.
Yeah, 6 accepted penalties against Flowers.
6 accepted penalties.
Yes.
As opposed to last year when it was 13.
And I think he had 11 against him, if I'm correct.
It was 13.
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
I believe it was 13 flagged and 12 accepted, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so I remember it being in the double figures.
Oh, wait a minute. I got it here.
You have the numbers in front of you?
I got it in the computer.
I know it was definitely double digits last
year. We can call it up. It was 13 flagged and 12 accepted.
12, okay.
So he has cut his penalties with only one game to go, unless he absolutely has a flag fest on Sunday. He has cut his penalties down.
Well, the accepted ones he's cut in half, and
yes,
the flagged ones is a difference of 4, because it's 13 versus 9 right now.
9 times he was flagged for holding in 2016. Okay. He's been flagged for holding this year 8 times. So, once again, that has been the bugaboo for him.
Yeah.
But he has cleaned up all the other stuff. He's only had one other penalty other than holding this year. That was one illegal shift, and that's it. So he has definitely been a heck of a lot more disciplined. Now, again, he's not an elite tackle by any stretch of the imagination. We're not trying to tell you that. But if the Giants can get other pieces to enhance the rest of that offensive line, I still say there's a good chance he's the left tackle next year.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jake in Maine. Jake, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
You got it. What do you have for us, Jake?
Well, you know, I have to say the last time I called was, I think, just after the draft, and the biggest concern then was whether or not it was really a great idea to draft a quarterback in the third round, and I really wish that was still my biggest concern for the team. I mean, what a season. But I think Paul, it was either you or maybe it was Fiegels, mentioned that the offseason is going to be like a breath of fresh air, and I think that's true, and I hope it's right. And so on the offseason, I wanted to ask about the general manager search, which, I mean, personally, I was kind of hoping would be over like yesterday, but I know there's a lot to go through, and it really, you got to take your time with that. I wanted to ask about, I know Lewis Riddick interviewed for the position. I think he's definitely probably one of the fan favorites. And I was curious if we knew anything about, I know he had something going on with the 49ers last year where he and Josh McDaniels were going to go together, and I think McDaniels backed out. Do we know I don't think I've heard anything, but if maybe that's something similar that could happen with us, if we could get McDaniels, because I know there's a lot of support, at least with around my friends and the fan base, for McDaniels to come in as head coach. Do we know if that's a possibility?
Well, what you have to understand, Jake, is every time a GM is interviewed for a job, and we've heard this from executives. We actually did interviews with Charlie Casserly and Andrew Brandt on this past week's Giants radio pregame show, and they both emphasize that whenever you interview a GM, one of the questions those GM candidates are asked is, if we give you the job, who are you going to bring as the head coach? So every GM has to have somebody in their mind that they're willing to recommend in that interview before they even get the job.
Correct.
Now, you're reading into the speculation about previous gigs that he was in line for and some of the candidates that were connected. It's very possible that the two of them have an established relationship, but he may be on his list of guys that he would consider if he ultimately gets the job. But until he gets the job, I mean, right now it's pure speculation about whether or not that would ever happen.
You must understand also, I would think that the GM walking into somebody's office of a particular team would have someone in mind who he thinks fits that certain situation.
He should, yeah.
I mean, the Giants' situation does not mirror what the 49ers did a couple of years ago. This team is in a far different place with many more different scenarios that are going to have to be dealt with, and it would seem to me that it would require different qualifications of the coach.
No, I think that's a good point. The only thing I would say is that if you're going to look for a coach here and you're looking at, okay, you have some defensive personnel still in place and under contract. Injuries is a big contribution as to why the defense pulled a 180, whereas the offense, since Ben McAdoo was the OC in 14, statistically, Paul, the offense has dipped each and every season from 14 to 17. So if you're a general manager candidate, is it a stretch to say that perhaps you're of the mindset that you need more of an offensive-minded coach for this team as opposed to a defensive-minded coach? I don't think that's a stretch, and that may be a similar thinking to how you approach the San Francisco 49ers, which also had their own offensive issues.
Then you have to throw another layer on that, though, and say, well, this is an older team with many more veterans in their prime who are certainly signed for the next year or two, and you know, you'll need a different kind of coach to deal with that kind
the
of
personalities.
Locker room and that roster makeup, as opposed to
that's
a Niner team, which was being in the middle of a total explosion and a rebuild to where they had young guys up and down the roster.
No, I think all of those things you have to take into consideration, and appreciate the phone call, Jake. Thanks so much for weighing in. The other thing is, you know, Josh McDaniels was the Broncos head coach at one point.
Yes.
So he's had some head coaching experience. Then he returned to New England. You know, I don't know what McDaniels' mindset is. You know, I know I've heard a lot through the Rumorville, Paul, that maybe he wants to hang around in New England until Belichick ultimately calls it a career. When that may happen, who knows? You know, and he sees himself as the successor to Belichick, and he'll just wait it out and be patient. You know, you always have to remember the head coach has to have interest to come too, even if the GM has a tie to that candidate.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting. A lot of times when people are throwing names out on the wall and they're speculating about who would be good or who would fit the profile or who might get an interview because they know somebody, you're 100% right, Lance. What you don't know is that guy really eager to take the interview? Does he have something going already that maybe he's real comfortable with? For example, sometimes you'll be in a situation where there's an assistant coach on a team or an associate head coach perhaps on a team who pretty much knows in a year or two he's going to be the next guy. Or he's an assistant general manager and he's been promised he's going to be the next guy. Or a pro personnel director who's been told, look, you like it here. We really love you here. You're going to be the next guy. Is he going to be so quick to walk out the kitchen door for another job?
Exactly. And we don't know. I mean, for all we know, the Patriots may have had those conversations with McDaniels. They may have laid out a succession plan when Belichick decides to retire, and he may be content with that. Or nothing like that has been discussed, and he's itching for a new gig again. So a lot of that has to be taken into consideration as well. Let's head back to the phone lines. We're going overseas. We got Eamon in Saudi Arabia. Eamon, how we doing?
Wow. Hello.
Hey, guys. Hi, Paul. Hi, Lance. How are you?
Doing
Hi.
Well, Eamon.
Happy New Year.
How are things with you? Yes.
Well, thank you so much. Happy New Year to you, and happy
you.
Holidays.
Same to you.
I've been a Giants fan since 81, and I just wanted to weigh in on a couple of points.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys saw Spags' press conference yesterday.
Yes.
And he started by saying that he loves Landon Collins, right?
Yes.
And he didn't share the same love with Eli. This just pretty much tells me that with the suspension that Eli, I think this is it for him as a Giant. What do you think?
Well, as we talked about this earlier in the program, it really depends on the new general manager and where the new general manager stands in terms of his evaluation of Eli Apple. Eli Apple right now is still under a rookie contract, and first rounders, I mean, just to give you the setup, you get a 4-year deal with a team option for a fifth. That's not going to necessarily change with Eli Apple, but until we know who the new general manager is, it's hard to really say with 100% certainty what his future with the team is going to be.
Yeah, too early to predict.
Okay. Now, do you think that Spags would be willing to be the defensive coordinator for next year?
Well, that's another good question. I mean, once again, it depends on whoever the new head coach is. It may not be, Eamon, a decision that Spags has to make because he has to, first of all, be offered that position depending on who the next head coach is. Excuse me. Remember, Ben McAdoo, when he was promoted, Paul, you know, he had been here with Spags on as the defensive coordinator. There was at least somewhat of a relationship between the two. The new head coach may not have any ties whatsoever to Spags, and he may have his own DC that he wants to bring in.
I will tell you this. We know that Spags is going to interview for the head coaching job after the season. That's number one. And no one knows the results of what that meeting is going to be. But here's what I will say. This organization has always been very fond of him from the very get-go. I remember when they plucked him out of the Ravens locker room. He was a defensive consultant with the Ravens, and the Giants brought him back to be defensive coordinator here because they have nothing but the finest of admiration for Steve Spagnuolo as a man and as a football coach. So he's going to get a lot of good vibe from people in this office, regardless of who the new general manager is going to be. I mean, I guarantee you, the new GM, when he comes in here, okay, if the GM is hired before the coach, and I think it will happen that way, but who knows, he will be told, just so you know, this guy Spags is terrific, and he has a great legacy here. Just so you know that.
And you should at least take him into consideration.
Yeah, and the new coach, if it's not Spags, he'll also be told, look, when you sit down with this guy Spags, know he's the real deal. You know, have a great conversation with him, and we really think you should take a little extra time when you sit down and get to know him because he's the kind of guy who really has been a tremendous asset to this organization. Now, whether or not that leads anywhere is anybody's guess, but he'll get more than a fair opportunity to speak his case in front of anybody. I have to believe that.
What else you got for us, Eamon?
Now, I'll tell you what I look forward for. I'm a big Eli fan, obviously, and I grew up with the guy. So I just want to say that Eli, believe it or not, out of my personal thinking, he still has a Super Bowl in him. You may think I'm crazy, but I really do think so. I don't think the team is totally broken. Yes, the injuries are a bummer, but I do think that the team has the proper fundamentals. If we can fix the O-line, just beef it up, and especially also the linebacking core, I think we have a big shot with Eli at the helm. Now, if I think it would be a grave mistake if the team would use their draft to actually look for a quarterback. You already have Webb. Webb knows the system. He's been mentored by Eli. I doubt that there's anybody coming out of college that would be a better candidate to replace Eli other than Webb.
It's hard to say at this point, Eamon. You know, once again, you got to know who the new GM is, and you got to know what the new GM thinks of Davis Webb, and maybe the new GM is enamored with one of these young prospects that could eventually declare for the draft. A lot of these guys have yet to declare for the draft, so we don't know what the pool of quarterbacks is going to look like. And, you know, I've seen teams, I'll give you an example of what the Philadelphia Eagles did. You know, just because there's a lot of quarterbacks on the roster doesn't mean teams are going to shy away from taking a guy. For example, Philadelphia had Sam Bradford, then they went out, they signed Chase Daniel to a pretty big veteran backup quarterback contract, and then the draft came along and they took Carson Wentz after they moved up. And then what happened a few months later, they shipped Sam Bradford to the Vikings. Carson Wentz all of a sudden is elevated to the starter position based on what they saw in training camp, and things drastically changed. So it's happened before in the NFL. I don't think it's crazy that just because you got two quarterbacks on the roster that maybe you go for a third.
Oh, that's correct. But it also depends on where the new GM's mindset is.
Of course.
Is he taking over a Super Bowl team in the next couple of years, or is he in a rebuilding mode? It all depends on where his mind is.
No doubt.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a real good point.
Yeah. If you're in a Super Bowl mode in the next 1 or 2 years, then you better keep Eli there because a rookie is not going to do it for you.
Correct.
Neither is Webb also.
Well, the problem is you're not going to know if you're going to get to a Super Bowl until the season plays out, and they may make the decision before the season even plays out. That you have to take into consideration.
I just remember the 3-12-1 team followed by a 9-7-4 followed by a Super Bowl. Correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Yes, yes. And who did the Giants tie for the 3-12-1?
Well, they had Parcells when they were 3-12-1 in 83, and then you'll remember it was actually 84 and 85 that they had to build their way to the Super Bowl in 86. So it was actually 3 years later after the 3-12-1 season. But they were a playoff team. Parcells turned them around very quickly. And if you think that this team can be turned around very quickly, well, then Eli Manning is going to have to be the quarterback.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having my call. I really appreciate it. Happy New Year to you
too.
And your family.
Same
thank
to you,
so
Eamon.
Much.
Well, appreciate the phone call.
Just a note, in terms of reclamation projects, it just came over via Watch Stadium on Twitter that the CFL has approved or cleared their teams to sign Johnny Manziel to a contract for the 2018 season. And that certainly goes in the hopper of a guy whose career was terribly sidetracked by off-the-field issues, whatever they may be, and is now going to try to get himself back in between the sidelines.
Yeah, that relates to the conversation we had earlier about Eli Apple and everybody who has had some demons and personal issues trying to get back their career, and Johnny Manziel may be going the route of the CFL. I want to go back to the point about the caller, the last one that he just made in terms of quick turnarounds, and we've seen that. It's not just the Giants. It's across the board. This league
is
defined by parity. I know you like to call it the quicksand of mediocrity. See, I have perfected your line. Adopted it. I like my parity term. But
Can I get hashtag quicksand of mediocrity?
I may get that. I don't know. I don't know if I'm willing to go out on Twitter yet with the statement, but I know
but
that you like
that
phrase.
That's like half a copyright, right? If you have a hashtag, it's like half a copyright.
Well, good luck getting the copyright, but between you and I will give you credit. You can at least use me as the backer because I heard it from you first. But the point is we have seen quick turnarounds. When seasons do not look good and they don't look promising and you're like, oh, my God, how is this team going to back – into a positive situation, perhaps. It's happened before. And here's another thing that I found interesting. I was looking through the NFC East standings, Paul. I don't know if you've picked up on this. And I'm not throwing this out there to present a hopeful situation and guarantee you that the Giants are going to quickly turn things around. But each of the three division winners in each of the last 3 years for the NFC East have been in last place the previous year. So that just goes to show you that there's been a quick turnaround within this division alone. Forget what else is going on across the NFL.
Well, I have the list in front of me, and of course you're talking about the 2015 Redskins, the 13 Eagles, the 12 Redskins, but also, going back a few more years, the 11 Broncos, the 11 Texans, and the 10 Chiefs, which gives you six teams since 2010 have gone from worst to first in their division, and there are plenty, plenty more if you want to take it all the way back to the 2000 season, but that's quite a ways. I wasn't necessarily going to go all the way back.
Well, I was going to say, that list is not even fully updated, because what I was referring to, if you go all the way down, it's the 15 Redskins, it's the 16 Cowboys, and it's the 17 Eagles. That's what I was referring to, Paul.
Oh, so this is old.
Yeah, it's old, because I'm talking about the last 3 years in the NFC East. That stops at 15. 15 was the first of three consecutive years in which the bottom team.
So if it's 16, if you're talking also in 16?
The Dallas Cowboys, they were dead last at 15.
So then that means it was 16, 15, 13, and 12. That would be four out of the last 5 years.
Well, add 17, too. The Eagles. The Eagles were dead last year. So add
another. Five out of six.
Yeah, five out of six if you want to take it even further. But I was referring to three in a row, though. 15, 16, 17. Yeah.
Five out of six is even more definitive when you consider that this division has seen its last place team go into first place the following year. So by no means should you be writing the Giants off in 18.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Joe's in Pennsylvania. Joe, what do we got?
Hey, great to talk to you guys here. Nothing but up for the Giants going in the New Year's here. You just don't get rid of Apple, you know what I mean? He's a talent, you know. You just got to sit down and talk with him, and if he wants to play here and he has to go by the rules, and he's seen what happened last year, and that's what has to happen with him. As far as the quarterback, I'm glad to see Webb is getting in there, because it's just like throwing somebody in the water there. To learn to swim, you got to get in that water to learn to swim, and the experience thing of it, it is a great deal for you, you know, really and truly. And I'm very excited for him just to get in there and see the speed of the game and everything, and see what he has to work on. Veterans miss passes and calls and all stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a big adjustment, and just to get your feet wet, you know. So what I was going to ask there, too, and as far as drafting a quarterback, I agree. We're up there this high, because you never know with injuries to Eli, to Webb, anybody. If we can get a stud quarterback, especially a mobile one, I say we take them, you know, because you just don't have the chances, and teams give up three number ones just to get up there to get in that spot to get a quarterback. I says, besides Tarkington and Hostetler, all my years was basically Sims and Eli, which weren't real mobile. Who was our next mobile quarterback, Paul, that was a starter? We never really had one.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
no.
Kerry Collins wasn't necessarily mobile guy.
No, Cannell Brown.
Yeah.
No,
well, I'm just going through the names here. Yeah.
Craig Morton.
Yeah.
Norm Snead. No.
Right.
The Giants.
And then I look like a team like the Eagles. They always had mobile guys, and that always made me jealous. Randall Cunningham, McNabb.
Yeah,
even
Joe.
Now the guy they
Joe,
had,
you know that, that's a good point, Joe, because the Eagles have a whole case of Super Bowl trophies down at their stadium, don't
no,
they?
No, I understand that, Paul. And all I want to see here is anybody that can knock the Eagles out of the playoffs, you know.
You're talking about this season. Okay. I thought he meant future seasons.
The Eagles are not going to the Super Bowl this year. Don't worry about it. You're going to be fine.
But the way the game has changed too, Paul, you have to admit, and with our receivers, oh, my God, if we have somebody that comes in there in time, you know what I mean, that could be somewhat of a mobile quarterback, that's a big advantage with the way they give you with the passing game now, and the way the defensive backs can't touch the receivers and stuff. That could make a big difference. So,
Joe, it's still risky business. Give me a solid offensive line and a running game any day with a drop back pocket passer and let him wing it. I'm sorry, but I'm not moving off of that.
No, I agree, but my statement is you're up there, and if you can get one of them top quarterbacks that are mobile, I say we take them no matter what. And after that, we have the guys that can play on the the receivers and the running backs, the tight ends. We just got to beef up the offense, defensive lines, and linebackers.
Joe, wait one second now, Joe. You honestly think the Giants are so close that they could not better off use a shopping cart full of picks and trading that pick away? Honest to goodness, do you really think that that's the only thing they need?
If you're going to franchise get a quarterback trade, I go, Paul. I go. But if you're not getting that, and that quarterback's there, like I said, there were three number ones. And just like you said with Bradford, hey, somebody gets injured or something like that, you know what I mean? They might give you another number one for one either Webb or quarterback.
I think that may be a stretch.
Injury
but
bug hits our quarterback.
I don't think anybody's given up a number one pick for a quarterback that went in the third round and hasn't played one game.
Yeah,
I mean, that
but
may
if
be.
If they get in there and start playing, they haven't showed.
Well, yeah, but the point is that trade would have to be made before next year's draft, which would be for the 2018 season.
Well, I'm just saying
anywhere
down the line. That's all.
Well,
chance to quarterback. If not, I agree with you, Paul. All I want to do is beef up the offense and defensive line.
Well,
that's
and Joe, I get your point, but you got to be careful when you say if the mobile quarterback's there, you just take them. The mobile quarterback also has to check off the other boxes in terms of decision-making,
in
terms of commanding the huddle, all of the other intangibles.
We never had a mobile quarterback that would – the way the game has changed now with for the passing for the receivers and that it would be a big advantage with the receivers we have that extra time.
Well,
and
listen, I don't disagree
with
you, Joe. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I agree the fact that a mobile quarterback with this current personnel group could perhaps help extend plays given the state of the injuries in the offensive line. But look at the teams that made the playoffs, Paul, this year, or at least in position to make the playoffs this year. Mobility is not what screams out at me when you look at all of these teams. New England with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's considered a mobile quarterback. Joe Flacco's considered a mobile quarterback.
You don't have to argue with me.
No, I'm just making a point. Phillip Rivers is considered a mobile quarterback. I mean, the Chargers are mathematically in the mix here. Now, Marcus Mariota is mobile. Ben Roethlisberger has seen better days in terms of his mobility. Then you go over to the NFC. Nick Foles is not nearly as mobile as Carson Wentz. Drew Brees is not a mobile quarterback. Matt Ryan I don't consider the most mobile quarterback. Russell Wilson is in the mix. The Seahawks may not even make it. And you got Cam. And Case Keenum's not the most mobile quarterback. So the majority of the teams that get into the playoffs, just because they have a mobile quarterback, does not necessarily become synonymous with instantaneous success. So they have to have the other factors and the intangibles working in their favor, too, for them to be an appealing quarterback.
I think, you know, I'm looking up here, the Rams, and I use the RG3 comparison often because RG3 was a number two overall selection. The Rams got four draft picks for the RG3 pick that the Redskins used, okay? First-round picks in 12 and 13 and a number two overall in 14. Second-rounder, 39 overall in 2012, okay? So it was four high-value picks plus an additional. Now, they wound up doing some things with those picks, but their final collection of talent, I'm not even talking about the Herschel Walker trade where Jimmy Johnson just literally got a Home Depot of players for Herschel Walker. That'll never happen again. Okay.
Cowboys, Vikings.
But among the guys that the Rams were able to ascertain because of trading the number two overall pick, among the guys, Michael Brockers, Janoris Jenkins, Greg Robinson, Alex Ogletree, that's just half of the take of what they wound up netting from the value of the picks that they got for that RG3 trade. And how'd the Redskins work out with that side of the deal?
Well, fortunately, they drafted Kirk Cousins in that same draft, so it didn't work out too bad because they had an insurance policy at the quarterback position. But your point,
the pick itself.
No, your point is well taken.
Who got
that,
more value out of that pick?
They certainly were able to turn that into a variety of picks that addressed a variety of positions. However, this is what I will say, but it's incomparable because it all depends on what the team does with those picks. So,
no question.
So you can't compare the situations. But
I don't want to compare the situations and the value. What I do want to compare is the potential.
I think that certainly the Rams got much more potential out of that deal. There's no doubt about it.
You get more potential when you make the trade. There's a higher percentage chance that you're going to help your overall team value.
In a variety of areas, because you're not just focusing on one position. But if you just want to focus on that trade, while I know a lot of people will still say that the Redskins, you know, didn't get anything out of that deal because of what happened with RG3, and I don't disagree with that. If you look at those Rams list of players that you threw out, notice how a lot of those guys are not currently on the team helping this team get to the playoffs.
No, but they did become productive NFL players.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that could be debated. Michael Brockers, I'll give you. Greg Robinson has become a journeyman. He went with the Lions. He's had trouble developing into an offensive line. I mean, Stedman Bailey was on that list I saw. You didn't throw his name out. I mean, he had some off the field. I know you were picking out, but
four quality players that wound up in the NFL and are certainly doing more for their teams than RG3.
Well, to me, Brockers and Jenkins are the two guys that had some long-lasting.
Ogletree.
Yeah, and okay, I'll give you Ogletree. Okay, I'll give you three. But the rest of that group, though, none of those guys really panned out. Those three, that's fair. Ogletree, I will add in that list. Absolutely. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Haas in New Jersey. Haas, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, how you doing? Long time no hear.
Good to hear from you.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. Hope yours was well. What do you got for us?
Just watching the Giants turmoil and start plundering and all ball fires and everything else. But I really want to talk about the Landon Collins and Eli Apple situation. For me playing, football, not at a high level in NFL, but I have played for some time, since I was like 26. So I played for some time. And my thing is that when you're in the locker room and you're battling every day and you're putting your gear on, no matter what goes on outside these walls, we are here battling together. And when you allow outside circumstances to affect the way you compete inside, it also creates a storm that affects us as a team. And I don't think that Landon was necessarily saying he was a cancer, and I think that the media kind of took it out of context. But he was saying that his actions had been cancerous to himself as well as to the team. And he is a good, solid player. He needs to pay attention and be able to locate the ball when it's in the air, and he would have more interceptions. But he's a solid player. He just has to understand and he has to be able to separate the two. We all have family problems. We all have problems. But he is a professional, and he needs to deal with that as such. So I'm not mad at Landon for what he said. I just think that the media kind of took it, out of context a little bit. But his actions have been detrimental to the team. And I do want to comment a little bit on Davis Webb. I would like to see him. I know that Eli, he's our legend, but I would like to see our future. Any coach or GM that's coming here, this right here is like a prize fight, okay? You have a built defense. You have a good pieces of offense. You need some offensive linemen and, different things like that. But we have a great, good players and great players. I think that this is an attractive spot for a GM and head coach to be able to build the legacy like New England for years to come. What do you fellas think?
Well, I think it, once again, you hit it on the nose. You said it depends on the outlook of the new general manager. I mentioned early in the program, Haas, there are certainly a number of defensive players that are still under contract. Olivier Vernon comes to mind. Janoris Jenkins comes to mind. B.J. Goodson is still on a rookie contract. You have some pieces there that you could build around. I don't disagree with you there. As far as the offense is concerned, Odell Beckham hopefully will return to full health. Brandon Marshall was not on a long-term deal, so they're going to have to determine what they want to do with that position. Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg are free agents. I think there's a lot more question marks on offense, Haas, than there are on defense. I think more of the nucleus you could bring back on defense because more of those guys are currently under contract. The offense, outside of Odell Beckham, there may be some turnover depending on what the new GM wants to do. There's no guarantee that this nucleus returns intact. I wouldn't go so far to say that.
Well, I would agree with you there. But then when you look at, first of all, I do not like Darian Thompson. Okay, we need a new free safety. We need a ball hawk. Earl Thompson. Thomas, he wants out of Seattle. I think we should try and go after Earl
Thomas. But Haas, let me just cut you off there, and I'll let you continue. Remember, you just said that Landon Collins' comments were maybe blown out of proportion with the media. In fairness, you just did the same thing with Earl Thomas. You're referring to that situation where he goes into the Cowboys' locker room. He walks over to Jason Garrett, and he says, you know, if you guys have interest, I'd ultimately like to play for the Cowboys. Why? Because he's a Texas native. That doesn't mean that he wants out of Seattle tomorrow. So, once again...
But what I'm saying is that he kind of wants to refresh his career. He wants to be able...
Haas, you're connecting the dots and you're making assumptions. That's what my bigger point is here. Just like people are making assumptions about Landon Collins. It's the same thing.
I am making an assumption, but what I'm saying is if he is a free agent, the Giants should try and go, and we need a free safety. We need a ball hawk. Okay, I've seen Darian Thompson miss too many tackles, wide open gang tackles, not tracking the ball, not being able to use his hips and be in the right position. Listen, I understand that he was hurt his rookie season, but he's a professional player as well. And Landon Collins, he can't be everywhere all the time. He needs help in that back end as well. So, I mean, and I know that the offense, we still have Sterling Shepard, Evan Engram, Rhett Ellison. We still have Odell. Yeah, we have Brandon Marshall. But we still have some pieces that are attractive. And I think if we could just build our offensive line, and whether we have Eli back there or whether we have a mobile quarterback, not a Michael Vick, but just a quarterback that can be able to create some type of space to be able to get the ball to the players on a 3rd and 7, to where as though, you know the rush is coming, and just be able to create. And I think that that's what Joe was talking about. But, fellas, I thank you and I appreciate it.
All right, Haas.
Happy holidays, New Year. Happy New Year to you.
You
same
too.
To you. And I just looked it up. But Earl Thomas is not a free agent until 2019, so he's not even going to be on the market next season. That's why I said it's more of wishful thinking and speculation, if anything. With that being said, we appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks to all the phone calls. We'll try to address some of your tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running tomorrow again. It will be Paul and I setting the table for the Giants and the Redskins, also getting to a variety of different phone calls on a variety of different subjects. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.